8:22. Been excited about getting this guy in the studio now. Director Buck Hales, Professor Buck Hales. He is with the SIU Cannabis Center and our guest. And first off, it's good to meet you.
My pleasure, Tom.
And second is I need to apologize for you not being in here sooner. I'm going to call it COVID brain or something. If 2 years for the Cannabis Science Center? Because I'm figuring if I didn't know about it, it must happen in the last 2 years.
Yeah, we actually got official IBHE certification in the summer. So we're actually still pretty new. We launched our website at the last year's Hemp Cannabis Symposia, which was all virtual.
Right.
And that was when we went live with our website. And then this year has just been amazing growth and excitement in the field.
Well, there's so much pressure on this. You got the aspect, you know, the governor talking about we need to change for the dispensaries, but that's not really what you do. And the reason why I found out about you was because of the Hemp Cannabis Symposium at SIU. And then I see from the SIU Cannabis Science Center, I'm going, why don't I know about this?
Well, you do now. So that's good.
Now.
Yeah, that's great.
And you know, and what was interesting, one of the first things I thought about you, I said, man, this cannot be easy because the world, federal government, state government, sees these as two different entities, hemp and marijuana. Hemp's one thing when it comes to federal government and how you can spend money to do research. Marijuana, another one. I bet you that leaves you going and doing a little sidestepping on this has to stay in that column, this has to stay in the other.
Yeah, you know, SIU has really focused all of our research on the hemp arena because of, you know, the federal restrictions. And we have federal funding, and we're really constrained. We can't do that search. You know, we can get DEA licensing and do THC pharmacology, which we
right.
do in our pharmacology department, School of Medicine in Springfield. But we've really focused on hemp, and it's a whole world unto itself.
And that's one of the interesting things. You can go out and say, look, I mean, from your standpoint and your research, which I want to talk to a couple of moments ago, hemp is the magic place for you in your past research and history. It's interesting because I was looking for something specifically so I could get a decent night's sleep. And so I started going out and looking into this, and I was stunned by the lack of research. And, you know, there's only one piece of research that's dependable done on sleep, and done at the University of Wisconsin. And I'm like, how can there only be one? But you know, this is really just now coming out of the shadows to some level of satisfaction.
Yeah, you know, it's like for 70 years, CBD was classified as a Schedule I, a narcotic with no known medical benefit. And it was really the Farm Bill of 2018, which was passed in December of 2018, that really legalized industrial hemp. And then the whole of the CBD industry and everything really has started from then. So we're really just basically a couple years into this. And there was no research, really, just just a few studies. University of Mississippi had their,
the big farm down there.
The big farm down. And that was really about all the research. But we have covered a lot of ground already, and we're just scratching the surface. It's really exciting.
All right, so sleep is my particular thing, but your background, and you've done a lot of research this, and I'm fascinated because although you've been doing this research, there's been another parallel of research, chronic inflammation. And the medical research is showing us more and more every year that chronic inflammation leaves carnage behind it. It's not just a swelling that goes away after you ice it. Years later, there's damage being done, chronic inflammation, chronic damage. And this is really, judging from looking at your work, this is your wheelhouse.
Absolutely. And you know, I mean, even if you think about obesity is a chronically inflammatory state. I mean, so inflammation is really at the heart and underlies almost all of cancer pathology. And so that's what, when we went after trying to prevent ovarian cancer, we targeted the inflammation to see if we could quell the disease. And that was a really successful strategy. And I think this really opened the door for a lot of understanding about the interplay between inflammation and cancer. And then a sequelae of inflammation is fibrosis. And it seems that fibrosis in the tissue is what has lingered through the years and has really led to, you know, the exacerbation of the diseases.
Musculature scar tissue? Fibrosis?
Yeah, so in the liver, you have liver cirrhosis is a fibrotic disease, pulmonary fibrosis, and the stellate cells of the pancreas have fibrosis, which is a prelude to pancreatic cancer. And we're finding that ovarian fibrosis, which is associated with a life of ovulation, is a prelude to ovarian cancer.
All right, so you've got inflammation, you talked about obesity. I've brought up the subject of sleep. There's talk about people being able the ability to relax CBN without the THC, the straight CBN, which is available in a lot more different ways and maybe not always the most healthy ways. Now, you saw that just flush through every video store. We've got hemp oil. But it looks like when marijuana, THC, indica, sativa got made illegal and all the pushback, don't say no, hemp got caught in the crossfire. Historically interesting. George Washington in letters talking about which seeds to use. Now, in the Illuminati series, the book series, they make it look like he's smoking a lot of pot at the time. But really, rope was a commodity that you just could not underappreciate. It was the oil of transportation when we only had wind. I visited a family farm in Iowa, and as a young man, I was like, oh, wow, this, you got a lot of this in the field. Well, you don't understand. This is where it was grown for the U.S. Navy for ropes in World War II. It's everywhere. And I'm thinking, I'm just going to throw some of this in the trunk. And they're just laughing their butts off the whole, take all you want. Right?
Absolutely.
But it seems like hemp got in the crossfire, and you were in a position where you can make up about 50 years of lost research. That's a lot of catching up.
Yeah. You know, and so there's been a lot of interest in the last decade or so about the palliative effects of marijuana for treating people who have cancer, you know, for the nausea, for the anorexia, and for, sleep and actually just mood elevation. But there was this kind of undercurrent of thought that maybe these cannabinoids actually treat the cancer itself and not just the symptoms. And that's where we plugged in.
Rick Simpson oil.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think is one of those where it is, with treatment. I've known people that have also used it in post-stroke and other items to be able to get some relief as well. I mean, how big of a sphere do you think this is, Dale?
I think global. I mean, I think, you know, it's touching everybody. I think it's really we're opening up this new horizon. You know, so Rick Simpson oil was really a prototype. And then Charlotte's Web, when it came onto the scene, where they started to realize it's very low THC, but it had really beneficial effects for stroke and seizure. And then that was CBD. And that was really when they started to realize you could actually grow cannabis plants that were just CBD and very little THC. And I think that's really made it much more accessible.
You know, as a former farmer growing up on the farm, the agricultural aspect in and of itself is something that I think is important. I was talking to the Department of Agriculture director on this subject on Monday. And, you know, one of the first things that I asked him about was the lack of processing that we have, which is maybe something I can make time for. But the potential agricultural impact for the farmer, the grower itself, I think is another item that there's a stigma from marijuana that overshadows this. And there's a great opportunity here, Dale.
I agree. And you know, I was at the National Corn Ethanol Research Center in Edwardsville, and talking when they had their gala celebration for their 20th anniversary, and there was a group of really prominent farmers from around, you know, the agricultural leaders in Illinois, and to a one, they're talking about hemp becoming the fourth crop.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, so the agricultural potential is just immense, and that's really one of the things that caused us to start the Cannabis Science Center, is because one of our pillars is the agricultural component. We have a leader in the industry, Carla Gage, and she's really knowledgeable about the three types of hemp, you know, the fiber crop, the flower crop, and the seed crop. And each one of those has tremendous market potential. And then, you know, soil remediation.
That's a good one.
Yeah, which is really cool.
Especially in strip mine country.
Yeah.
Because heavy metals get dug up with coal. There's problems with the dirt to begin with. This can help enrich the soil. It's quick cycle, it's growth cycle. I mean, just in and of itself, the idea of paper production from farm to processing to literally becoming a newspaper or a roll of toilet paper. Whereas you can do this in 4 months, it takes a tree 20 to 80 years to do it.
Absolutely.
That's great math. Who wants to argue with me about that, you know? Yeah.
You know, I heard a really interesting fact was that the original Levi jeans were made out of hemp.
I read that somewhere.
Yeah, just heard that just in the last
because
couple of days.
Because it was used so often and people knew it was useless for almost anything, but it was good for these other things, and fiber is one of them, and now we're rediscovering that.
Yeah, the fiber crop and the fiber industry is really lagging behind the popular CBD industry, but I think the potential for the fiber industry, you know, and also, you know, using the herd to make hempcrete and all these other applications.
I've read some of that. Herbcrete. It's even stronger because the long fibers and the durability of them. And as we've said, you know, hemp ropes. I mean, when you didn't have oil, you had to have a rope sail a ship, go up and down the river to make a bed. It was used in everything.
Yeah.
And now we've got, of course, nylon and all these things replace it.
It's really interesting with all that hemp that was planted back in the 30s, you know, in the early 40s.
Yep.
And then it's gone feral.
So
there's actually research at SIU. Dave Gibson's looking at this, and they're mapping sort of the genetics of the feral hemp to improve the growth characteristics of these more specialized cultivars.
Yeah, and we can put it on a ditch bank, and it'll keep the dirt from going in too while we're doing it. There's a lot of good things there.
Yeah.
All right. So what about the issue of processing? I've heard a lot about this from the people, including people who are taking this and farming now. This is my problem. I don't have a processor nearby. I've got to take it to Missouri. That cuts my profit.
Yeah, absolutely. This is. I think there was a huge glut of hemp farming in the first year, and about 80% of it never made it to market because there was no capacity. First of all, you have to have a sort of a high volume for drying it too, and so you have to have a lot of real estate for even, you know, drying it, and then the processing is really the bottleneck. And so what the advice is identify where you're going with the product before you start to produce it in the first place. And I think processing is actually a big horizon now. AeroSource H in Metropolis is a huge processing facility.
Good.
There's Illinois premium processors in DeQuoin, which they went into the old bread factory there, Paul Purcell's group. And so they're partnering with SIU to improve their extraction techniques. It's pretty fun.
You know, when I look at, of course, what you are doing at the SIU Cannabis Science Center, and I'm a big fan of the pillars of the academy from Socrates, and that, you know, the higher schools of learning have a responsibility. And one of those is to learn more. Another is to share what you've learned. And that looks to be because if we are playing catch-up and you're at the tip of the spear, I would think that people would start coming to you for advice. What have you seen in that respect?
I put my phone number on the cannabis website, and I get very interesting calls a lot of times.
Yeah.
And so, you know, some are like they're entrepreneurs and they want to invest, and then other guys want to get their stash analyzed. You know, it's like quite the range. You know? In fact, there's a really funny story. This guy calls up and he said, "It's so weird. You know, I buy new pot and it's great, and the next day and it doesn't work. And I think my girlfriend is doing something to it. And I want you to analyze it to see what's happening to it." And I thought, if she actually had something you could put on there that did that, that would be market unto itself. But
yeah, it would. In Canada, United States, because of the issues of driving and on the list goes.
Yeah.
So when are you changing your phone number?
Yeah, actually, you know, the center still is kind of a we don't have a brick and mortar house because we're all spread amongst the different
lots of
departments.
different disciplines. I noticed that when I was reading some of the information about you, that, you know, where you work, because when I call him Dale and I call him Buck, but it's director / professor Hales. You've got a long history. It's interesting, and this work that you've done, cancer and inflammation, really interesting stuff when it comes from a medical standpoint. You're a hardcore researcher here, and I'm fascinated by what you're doing and what it represents for, in particular, the agriculture community here in Southern Illinois. I mean, you can open up a field that maybe you didn't plant before, and this stuff grows like a weed, literally. So what are the Canna Dogs?
So the Canna Dogs is a, like all the people kind of who are associated with the Cannabis Center, and we have a newsletter we put together, so we call it the Canna Dogs. So there's like the barbecue dogs, and there's other these dog entities.
Right.
So that's what that is, Canna Dogs.
All right, so the second annual Southern Illinois Hemp Cannabis Symposium is coming up Saturday, March 26th. What is going to be done there, and who would you like to see in the audience or come there and participate?
Okay, first of all, we're really excited because this year it's going to be in person. Last year was virtual. In fact, I think everybody's really happy to see everybody again.
Right.
It's a great time. And so, it's geared towards the cannabis industry with medical and recreational hemp cannabis interests. It'll offer information on laws, regulations, establishments of standards in the cannabis industry, And a really interesting piece about the Delta 8 and the retail landscape for the Delta 8 and alternative cannabinoids. I mean, you see Delta 8 for sale everywhere now.
And, I do.
Yeah.
And I hear a lot of people complaining slash, is this legal? I got caught in the middle of a couple of conversations. Well, we got turned in because we're selling this, but it's not. I mean, I've heard all kinds. I know it's very controversial. Don't know much about it.
Yeah, so it's actually derived from hemp, but chemically converted to Delta 8 THC, which is an isomer of Delta 9 THC, but it's about one third as powerful, but it still binds to the same receptor. Evidently, it has a constellation of other effects, and this is the part that everybody's having fun with now.
All right, and because I've seen that, and people saying, oh, you need to mix it with this food so it binds to the fat, and then, and like I said, I've seen some people, and I know some people are still arguing about some of that, whether it should be on the shelves in some areas as well.
Yeah, so the thing I'm most excited about the symposia is a colleague of mine from the University of Chicago, who's at the Ben May Cancer Center, did some really pioneering work on the potential use of CBD and cannabinoids for the treatment and prevention of COVID. And it's gotten a lot of press in the last, you know.
I've read the research.
It came out.
Made it on the Drudge Report.
Right. In mid-January is when this was released.
Yeah.
And so Dr. Rosner is going to give us a very even-handed discussion about the science behind this. You know, so a lot
well,
of people
flew in the face of a convention that, you know, but this is back to the anti-inflammatory issue when it comes to inhaling it in your lungs. COVID causes lung tissue to inflame, and so you've got a drug that's known to be able to deal with that in the direct interface. I mean, I can see where there might be something there that you might want to share.
Yeah, absolutely. I think having Dr. Rosner actually talk about the details of that. You know, a lot of people kind of have the idea, well, you know, I've smoked weed for years and I'm never going to get COVID. And
nah, yeah, that's you know, not so, how that works.
Yeah, I think it's kind of self-serving idea there. And then a really interesting talk we're going to have is Dr. Mary Kinzel is going to talk about truth in labeling and CBD products. So they went around to gas stations and Little Caesars and Family Video and all these places that sell CBD.
Right.
And then they analyzed what is really in there. And it's really interesting that it's not a lot of CBD.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's curious because this is something else we knew. And then people are kind of, it's like the early days of vaping. It was like the Wild Wild West. Hemp is legal, and you start seeing all this stuff show up, and people are going, "Whoa, wait a second! You're using this as a medicine." And all I can tell you is, I think the placebo effect is real and alive today in the world.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So, do you have to fight for legitimacy in this department? Has academia come around to this? Is this the place where you've got to start?
I think we've really turned the tide. You know, when we started the new, we have a cannabis certificate program,
yeah.
and it was named, you know, intensive indoor horticulture because they didn't want to call it indoor cannabis,
yep.
But 95% of the students who are in the certificate program are there. You know, it's the workforce of tomorrow. You know, there's far greater need for people to work in the industry than we have people to work in it now. So education and developing that workforce is another mission of the Cannabis Center.
Dale, tell me one thing that can be made out of marijuana or something that is being made out of hemp, more specifically, that people would be utterly, totally surprised by. Can you give me one? We talked about plastic. We talked about concrete.
Yeah, I think the whole of the fiber industry is what is completely not appreciated yet.
So you think hemp is a potential emplacement for plastics, more biodegradable beyond a cent?
Absolutely.
We see plastics in the ocean and a constant concern there. I mean, I've been to the river. I see what's on the bank.
Yeah, I think the idea of the development of the fiber industry and the replacement for, you know, the petrochemical industry is just immense. And also, you know, the forestry industry, the logging industry, I think their lobbying really is what put hemp in the dark for so long.
Right.
Yeah, so I think that fiber industry is the part of the industry that is yet to really be realized.
Yeah, and when you look around you, do you want a car made out of plastics or bottles that can be made out of hemp that'll biodegrade much quicker and have all the virtues of the product during its usable lifespan? There's some fascinating stuff there.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and instead of a petrochemical, which, you know, saves oil for other purposes or however you want to look at it. hey, man, it's really good to meet you.
Really fun. I really appreciate your knowledge and how well-prepared you were coming into this interview. That's really
good. It's a privilege, you know, because this is one of these areas. I mean, I'm a farm kid. I was in the Future Farmers of America. And, you know, in ag, I see this as another opportunity for the farm to grow and to stay viable. And you don't do that. You know, I can remember the first year granddad. I'm like, what the hell's this? It's soybean, Tom. It's going to be really big someday. And I wonder if sometimes some granddad might be saying their grandson the same thing. Dad, granddad, why are we pulling all these weeds in? Here's why. Soybeans are going to be big. Hemp's going to be big for us someday, too. And it'll help all of our crops later when we rotate.
Absolutely.
And I can't think, but there'll be a similar conversation if it's not already been had.
Yeah, and I think hemp medicine, you know, and going in that direction, the whole of cannabis medicine, it's the next horizon.
Well, our guest this morning is Professor Buck Hales. He's with the SIU Cannabis Science Center, their Cannabis and Hemp Symposium. And there are a lot of entrepreneurs who are looking at this here in Southern Illinois. I've had some of them on the air. Saturday, March 26th, if you want to sign up, what do you got to do?
You can go to the Cannabis Center website, and there's a link there to the registration site. It's also going to be streamed virtually on our YouTube channel.
Good. That's cannabiscenter.siu.edu. Dale, once again. Thanks,
right,
man.
Thank you, Tom. It's really a pleasure.
843.